Raising our interest? The Fed meets to discuss an interest rate hike.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Welcome to the Morning Open. The Federal Reserve Board meets in Washington today to talk interest rates, and things are looking a little more hopeful for Greece. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, let's take a look at what the markets are doing this morning. After a truly terrible Tuesday, things are looking up. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 0.3% to 11,023, back above 11,000. The NASDAQ up 0.33% to 2480. The S&P 500 up 0.5% to 1190. Ever since the financial collapse in 2008, short-term interest rates have pretty much been kept at or near zero. Members of the Federal Reserve Board meet in Washington today to discuss whether it's time to raise them. John Dimsdale has more.
At their last meeting 6 weeks ago, Fed members said the recovery was too fragile to even think about raising interest rates. Since then, companies have reported better profits and even begun hiring workers. Still, Richard Berner at Morgan Stanley says the Fed sees no need to change course yet.
The key is that monetary policy hinges on the outlook for the economy and inflation. And so when their outlook starts to change to somewhat higher inflation, then I think they'll think it's appropriate to remove policies aimed at an emergency situation.
Even a hint of higher interest rates now could squelch the recovery, says Dan Cook of IG Markets.
Just kind of like if you plant your yard, you don't mow the grass when it's a day old and just starting to sprout up. You kind of wait till the roots are established before you make any moves.
Cook figures it'll be fall before the Fed starts raising rates to more normal levels. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
One bullish spot in all the bearish news, ironically enough, Goldman Sachs. The investment bank added 0.2% yesterday. That despite the fact most of its executives spent the day on Capitol Hill getting grilled by lawmakers on accusations of fraud. Here to talk Goldman with us is our very own Nancy Marshall-Genzer in Washington. She joins us live. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
Nancy, why exactly were Goldman executives hauled before the subcommittee?
Well, the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations is investigating what part investment banks might have played in the financial crisis. And specifically, Goldman is accused of selling shaky investments to clients without telling them it was betting against those very same investments. Now, this is a Senate investigation, Stacey. It has nothing to do with the Securities and Exchange Commission lawsuit that was filed earlier this month against Goldman.
Well, what do Goldman's clients think of all this? Is Goldman going to lose business?
Well, I asked Lawrence White about that. He's dean of the Stern School of Business at New York University. And he says yesterday's testimony could raise questions in some clients' minds.
But there may be some clients who will say, you know, these guys are starting to sort of talk behind our backs. Maybe they don't have our best interests at heart after all. Maybe we ought to at least pull back some of our transactions.
But White also says that Goldman CEO Lloyd Blankfein had a point when he said yesterday that Goldman works with sophisticated investors. Blankfein says they were looking for risk, and that's what they got.
Indeed. Goldman, of course, got a chance to make its case yesterday. Its stock actually went up, but overall, not a great day for Goldman.
Oh, exactly. Not a great day at all, especially because senators grilled Goldman executives about emails they wrote describing investments they had sold as junk, crap, or even using words that I can't say on the radio, Stacey, which they said frequently in the hearing. This is the email equivalent of having your dirty laundry aired in public.
What about the financial overhaul bill that's been stalled in the Senate? Would Goldman's hearing give any momentum to that?
We'll find out today. The Senate is scheduled once again to vote on whether to start debate on this bill. Republicans have been filibustering the measure since Monday, and Democrats just haven't had enough votes to overcome the filibuster and proceed to the debate.
Nancy Marshall-Genzer in Washington. Nancy, thank you.
You're welcome.
You're listening to the Morning Report for Wednesday, April 28th at marketplace.org. There is some hope on the horizon for Greece this morning. There are reports that the International Monetary Fund might be willing to give the cash-strapped country more money. Yesterday, Standard & Poor's downgraded Greece's debt to junk status. That will make it very hard for Greece to borrow money. Marketplace's Stephen Beard has more from London.
The IMF is reported to be planning to offer Greece a bigger loan, an extra $13 billion. But some of Greece's European partners are showing less enthusiasm for helping out. The German people are strongly opposed to a bailout, believing that Greece is essentially bust. The crisis has spilled well beyond Greece's borders. Investors have also been dumping Portuguese government bonds. Spanish and Italian bonds could be next in the line of fire, says Neil McKinnon of VTB Capital Group.
There's a systemic risk here that if bond investors do suffer losses, which they already are, anyone who's bought Greek bonds this year is already suffering a heavy loss, there is a feeling that other countries might go down the same route.
And he says this is why the Greek crisis has gone global. Many governments, having bailed out their banks, have to raise billions of dollars this year. But investors seem increasingly reluctant to lend. That could blow the economic recovery off course. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
In the meantime, the Greek government has said it will have to cut salaries, pensions, and thousands of jobs. From Athens, Joanna Kakissis has more.
The Greek finance minister insists there's no way his country is going to default. But promises are not calming markets. That's because economists say the Greek government won't be able to sell key spending cuts to an already angry Greek public. And they may be right. Polls show most Greeks strongly oppose more spending cuts. Teacher Aphrodite Blaza joined hundreds at a protest in Athens.
Because most of us are working people and we are living just from our salaries. We have nothing else.
Many Greeks aren't as diplomatic. They're angry that some German politicians and media are portraying them as lazy, corrupt freeloaders. One radio host responded by likening the Germans to a country of cheap, unhappy misers. In Athens, I'm Joanna Kakissis for Marketplace.
Today, China slapped tariffs on U.S. chicken. It's the latest in a series of trade spats between the two countries. Steel, tires, nylon, and now chickens. Are we crossing the road to a trade war? Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
Today's ruling could make U.S. chicken as much as 30% more expensive in China. Beijing argues U.S. farmers get unfair subsidies on what they feed their chickens. What you may not expect is essentially we're talking about chicken feet. That's the part of the bird the Chinese really want. The valued claws go for 40 cents a pound in China, compared to 2 cents in the States. But as far as trade battles go, Sean Ryan at China Market Research does not see the sky falling.
For chicken feet, this is not huge business, but it is a message saying to the United States, let's not engage in a trade war at a serious level.
As in, back off. Chinese leaders, just like American politicians, cater to their constituents too.
There's a lot of political jockeying for power right now, and it's important that Chinese leaders are not seen as being weak and caving into too much foreign pressure.
For all the trade grievances, he says Beijing and Washington have kept things from getting out of hand. Ryan says the key is avoiding a blow-up over the Chinese currency. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
It seems ads are popping up in ever more exotic places. Airplane tray tables, bathroom stalls, even school buses. That one got the Federal Trade Commission's attention. It's worried about the effect those ads will have on kids. So it's launching a campaign today to teach kids how to deal with the Adapalooza. Alisa Roth reports.
The campaign is called Edmongo, and it's aimed at so-called tweens. There's an online game that's supposed to help kids recognize ads and understand what goes into making them. Janet Evans is an attorney in the FTC's advertising division. She says the campaign also includes extensive materials for teachers and parents. It's all about opening kids' eyes.
So that they come into it with a much better understanding of what the purpose of advertising is, how it works, and to teach them to be savvier consumers, to be critical, have a critical eye when they look at advertising.
It's not that earlier generations haven't been exposed to advertising, but there are suddenly so many more ways for marketers to target kids. Susan Lin directs the campaign for a commercial-free childhood. It's a national advocacy group, and she says the FTC is wasting its time.
The fundamental mission of advertising is to make us, you know, believe that we need these products. And that doesn't have to do with cognition. It has to do with our feelings and our emotions.
She says the U.S. lags far behind other industrialized countries in regulating ads to kids. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Recession has hit state budgets hard. One state that's done pretty well so far, though, is Texas. Its governor has been touting his state's financial health, but now the Lone Star State might be facing some money troubles of its own. From KUT in Austin, Ben Philpott reports.
The Texas legislature doesn't meet again until 2011. And when it does, lawmakers will be greeted with a $10 to $17 billion budget shortfall. To fix that, they'll try to scrub the budget. It sounds much nicer than cutting. Lawmakers replace some government workers with computers or outside contractors.
Well, we call that low-hanging fruit.
Arlene Wolgemuth is a former state lawmaker. She helped scrub the budget during the state's last fiscal crisis in 2003.
I think most of the low-hanging fruit has been picked. I think they're going to have to get the ladder and get way up in the tree to find that efficiency. But they're going to have to do it.
State agencies have already been asked to cut their budgets by 5%. Another 5% cut to state agencies is expected in the next budget. That's only going to save a couple billion. Texas does have an economic stabilization fund, also called the Rainy Day Fund, that will have about $8 billion in it. State Comptroller Susan Combs says that should be good enough.
There is no Chicken Little, sky is falling. We have a hole. We have shovels. We know how to fill it. And fortunately, we've got a pile of cash over the Rainy Day Fund with which we can fill the hole.
That's if it's on the low end of the projected budget gap. The high end, about $17 billion, could mean even more cuts and the possibility of increased taxes. But Republicans control the state legislature and just aren't too keen to raise taxes. From Austin, I'm Ben Philpott for Marketplace.
And finally, where's the love? The Department of Transportation has fined Southwest Airlines $200,000 for breaking rules when it bumped passengers of oversold flights. Apparently, Southwest didn't inform those passengers of their rights, which include being paid for the inconvenience. Last year, Southwest bumped more than 13,000 passengers. That's 80% more than the next closest airline. Southwest does carry the most passengers of any U.S. airline. In Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. And this is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.